Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Webb here at StuWebb.com, and it is Saturday, May the 2nd, 2026, and I have the honor to have Professor Joe on with me. Now, we did a show a couple, 3 days ago. It's going to be published along with this show. There's quite a few things that have been going on pertaining to my internet site and other activity of and other events that are going on in my life that have been strange. It's kept me from doing things the way I should be. Now, we're coming out full blast. The show we just completed gets into all the aliens. It gets into UFOs. It gets into all the stuff. Missing scientists and so forth. But this show, we're kind of going down the continue path because we're going to be referencing Papoose Lake, Nevada, and other things that Joe can get into. But I'm going to hand the mic over to Joe.
The interest right for today between Stu and I and our conversation centered around a guy by the name of Ed Slade, who Stu had met in Las Vegas. He was an Area 51 scientist. If you see the movie Independence Day.
It's actually Papoose Lake, Nevada scientist. Area 51 okay. Is near it, about 60 miles apart. Go ahead, Joe.
So, let's see, where is my thought? Ed Slade had many things to say that clarified things, and he had many points that have been overlooked, but if you go to Stu's website, he has listed Ed Slade's interviews, which are about, the original interviews were about 6.5 hours, and it was loaded with information concerning the alien question. Now, with Stu, his view is kind of like David Icke's. He and others, who I won't name, but what they do is that there is the aliens in themselves, the reptilian and the Draco. Those are the fallen angels. Now, where did Stu get this? Got it from Otis Johnson, who was a 007 agent, according to Stu. And Otis was one of Stu's main conduits about where our country is and where other country is at this time, which can be summed up in a statement. The breakaway civilization is about 100 years ahead of us in technology. In other words, they are totally into space and time, not fusion. Space and time. And one of the things that happens on a UFO that was disclosed by Ed Slade is that there is a mercury component to the UFO. And what happens, it causes a plasma. The plasma then functions itself into splitting the gravity waves, which is then splits time. There's no time. Now that one I don't understand myself because I'm not the scientist that Ed Slade was. So one of the things that was brought out was how could a body that was lost on Lake Tahoe in Nevada with Reno, how did a body that was reported lost in the lake end up in Monterey Bay, which is just south of San Francisco? Well, Ed Slade said, well, it's easy. And so Mr. Johnson said the same thing. The earth is hollow. By that it means it's kind of like Swiss cheese. The surface of the earth down to the inner earth is about 850 square miles. I met a Hioka Iroquois Indian many years ago, and he said to me, the first level is the surface of the earth. Then there's a second level, third level, and on the third level is the abode of the fallen angel reptilian, insectoid, tall and short, gray. Below that are the fields of gold mining. So, between the surface of the earth to the surface of what some people like to call Agartha, or the inner Earth, is 850 miles. And that 850 miles is like Swiss cheese, full of huge caverns. Well, one of Stu's contacts is a woman out in Bakersfield, California, whose uncle worked for the United States Navy. Worked for, he was not in the Navy, he worked for. And one of the places out in that desert is the Naval Weapons Testing Center. And her father worked in that area. And he said, yes, indeed, underground, under deep down, are channels where the Pacific comes in all the way, going back to places like Bayview, Washington, where they have a sonar-based training center. What is a sonar naval-based training center doing in Washington? Well, goes deep down under one of the channels. So when you take this into account, it doesn't seem like that could possibly be so, but soon there's going to be some of the disclosure, and that disclosure is going to announce, yes, indeed, there is a contact with the alien. Now, in my own investigation, there was a survivor, and this is in Corsi's The Day Before Dallas and the crash site in the day after Roswell, in which, yes, indeed, they did. They picked up a UFO craft. But what they did not say is that there was a survivor, and that survivor began dictating to the gathered earthlings, if you want to say that. They had a stenographer that was doing the typing of what she was told. And that book you can find at, you can order it from Amazon, and it'll tell you what was said by the alien itself. They were called Ebens, and they were from the constellation of Orion. In about 1976, there was a group that was chosen to journey with the Ebens back to their home base. And on the way, one died. When they arrived and came back, one stayed, and then one died on the way, and then the rest survived and then told the story about the Ebens. So that is an indication of telling how Ed Slade knew what he was saying. And consequently, it shouldn't be taken lightly. And I sometimes think that the breakaway civilization is doing this with purpose. That is to get the people used to the high technologies that are going to come. And there's a tendency that for a lesser than civilization to pick up higher technology, to abuse it and misuse it. And so those kind of things give a credibility to what Otis Johnson said and Ed Slade. And I think it would be good at this time for the new listener who's listening to this, for you, Stu, to give how it is you ended up in Las Vegas and met Ed Slade.
Well, I was in Vegas, and where I was living, and it happened to be that there was a group of us that used to have a little Bible study together on Saturday nights around 6 o'clock. Everybody'd bring a dinner, bring something, and Lisa, my friend, put it on her house up in the west, up off of Charleston, in the Lakes. It was called the Lakes. Nice development, nice area. Had some really serious players there, prayer warriors. And two or more come together, God's in your midst. We changed headlines. But one day, we changed headlines, week after week after week. It even got to a point that Lisa husband that I introduced her to at a prophecy club meeting. He wanted to meet her. She was just a friend. Attractive. But the point was, is that he invited somebody. This friend, I don't want to mention the name because I forgot it actually. But he was a preacher that was online. I mean, he was telling the truth about end time prophecies and stuff. So he invited him to speak at the house, at the meeting. Well, that attracted about 50 people because they announced it on the internet or someplace. I forgot. Facebook something. But anyway, that attracted a helicopter, police helicopter, with lights shining down, circling around the house and pointing its light on the house for about an hour, trying to intimidate everybody there. So the evil was trying to force us from having this, but here's what the deal was. Ed Slade came to before that event. Ed had come over, and I met him, and Lisa and her husband met him at a restaurant and sat down with him, and he was standing there in line at this restaurant, could eat by himself, and they invited him to sit down. They got to know him, and he was talking about Jesus and stuff, and that was their subject, one of them, and politics, and got to know him, so invited him to burger. That's how I met Ed. Well, then when he had said Ed was a scientist, I walked over, I called Otis up, and Otis, by the way, his credential was, he was a direct assistant to General Michael Flynn. 2 weeks before Michael Flynn was indicted, Otis was killed. And 2 months before that, he told me, he says, Stu, he says, if Mueller, U.S. attorney, doesn't do his job and arrest Hildebeest, Hillary Clinton, he called her Hildebeest, for crimes that they've committed against in the election, against Donald Trump, etc., and the false dossier, the Russian dossier that they've created, he says, if Mueller doesn't arrest Hildebeest, he says, I'm going to be arresting Mueller myself. Well, Otis was dead 2 months later, and I talked to him on his deathbed by phone with the son there in Omaha at the base up there, the military base, hospital, veterans. And I talked to him. He put the phone up. He says, Dude, they got me this time. They stonarred me. Well, that's what I get hit with every day. And it's coming out of E-Systems of Dallas, Texas, which is Raytheon, which is Daddy Bush's company, and so forth. But Otis, I called him the next day. He says, Stu, I got to go. He says, I'm on my way into hiding. And his son called me a week later and said he was dead. Then that was about another week later. I hear about General Flynn, which I saluted at an airport in Grand Island, Nebraska, where I took Otis in his Cadillac up when I was working on a house down the street he got me. The drummer of the Nomads, matter of fact, owned it, the old group, the Nomads, and he was looking for a builder, and the realtor was so happy that I had done this work on Otis's house and so impressed that they conned me into coming up there. It wasn't much of a con job because I, you know, picked up $50,000 in 6 months, but here was the deal. I took Otis up there, and I saluted General Flynn as he got his luggage out of the trunk, and Otis is rolling it over there, and General Flynn comes out, salutes him, he salutes him back, and then he saluted me, and I saluted him back, and I left. But, so, Otis wasn't a lightweight, and they were going to the one in Utah, a new base up there, Bluffdale. And he came back and reported to me later that, yes, Stu, he said that they'd build an alien base right next to it. Bluffdale's controlled by Daddy Bush and the Israeli Mossad, telecommunications worldwide of everybody. They know what is going on. So Otis wasn't a lightweight, but Otis confirmed with me about the saucers. He said, ask him about Depolium. That's element 118. It's what they make the saucers out of. It's 115 is liquid faction. 115, mu metal, they call it. And 116 and 117, I forgot what they are, but there's 149 elements on planet Earth. And the devil has been looking for that. and his little goons running around because they found this in the Bible code. So they've been running around Christian groups 15 years ago trying to find the elements where they're at. Well, they were up to, last time I heard, about 133, 135 on the element chart they had found. These elements the aliens want, which are the fallen angels. They're fallen angels, folks. They aren't aliens. And the deal is, I went up to Ed. He was sitting on the couch, and I walked in the door, and I said, "How you doing, Ed?" And he got up, and he said, "Good, Stu, how are you?" And he shakes my hand. He sits back down, and I said, "Ed, I want to talk to you about something." I said, "I know that, you know, what you did, it was out there. What you did for a living was super classified, obviously, as a U.S. scientist." But I said, "Mu metal, that's what they build the saucers out of, wouldn't it?" And it spoofed him. It spoofed him. And he told Lisa and her husband, I don't want to mention his name, told him that he was spoofed by what I said. So, next couple of times, you know, I discussed things intentionally about some things that I knew, and it warmed him up to me. So then he started talking to me in private, and that's how we became friends. Well, Ed was a heavyweight. He was a U.S. scientist working at what's called Papoose Lake, Nevada. Papoose Lake, they only had two or three scientists work out there. Matter of fact, Bob Lazar, at one time, worked out there for a short period of time. He saw the place. And Bob's out there and he's alive. Now, I've got some videos that I've saved recently because Bob Lazar has made public a couple of things in recent month pertaining to the disclosure. Now, Bob Lazar saw it because he was a personal friend of and worked with John Lear. And John Lear was a test pilot at Area 51, which is also known as Groom Lake, where they got the little alien restaurant up there on the highway, and I spoke at that place, and they do an event once a year on the aliens. And it packs down, believe me, people are sleeping out on the Nevada ground in sleeping bags. 1,000 people sometimes show up. Now, that is not where Papoose Lake, Nevada was. Papoose Lake is about 60 miles up the road. I went up there with a BBC reporter, photographer, had his camera and everything in his trunk, and his girlfriend was with him, and she moved it inside this little trailer, because they only had about a half dozen trailers for the guests, and they were split in two, so there was a bedroom on one end, and a bedroom on the other end, and a bathroom, etc. And so, anyway, everybody else slept on the ground. I even slept on the ground. I spoke up there once. But Ed was one of those scientists, or when we drove up the road from the little alien restaurant, all of a sudden a stair step of flying saucers off to the left. I said, "Oh my God, this is where we're stopping." So there were about three cars, and I was one of them driving. Had a couple passengers with me, and the other two cars are filled up. Anyway, we pulled off the side of the road. And the cameraman is looking for his camera, and he's asked his girlfriend. She says, "Oh, no, I took it in the hotel." Well, that ruined that, so they didn't have the camera they wanted to take pictures. But it was stair-stepped, these flying saucers. And they'd move, and you'd see them drop down and drop down. They're going into the hole. They were going into Papoose Lake, Nevada. Papoose Lake, Nevada is where it's underground, and it's a scientific laboratory with aliens in charge, folks. Fallen angels running the show, and it's a U.S. government lab. Now, Ed, when Kennedy got killed, Johnson got fearful of his own life, whatever reason. But anyway, he summed up Ed, scientist. So he brought him to the White House, and he wanted to make a gun, an automatic, almost like a shotgun, the biggest round as he could have. And he wanted something to have at least 50, 60 rounds coming out of it. Well, Ed took a automatic, I forgot what he said it was, and he chopped it, cut it off, precision, everything. And so Johnson had that with this big clip inside his pocket, You'd always see Johnson after Kennedy's murder. He always had his right hand in his pocket. He told Ed. He said, Ed says, why did I make this for you? He says, man, he says, if they come after me, he says, I'm going to blast everybody around me. He says, I'm going to make sure I get them before they totally get me. Anyway, that was one of his little toys he made for President Johnson. Now, Ed revealed to me everything. During the interviews that I did with him, I think you said it was about six of them, I believe. Those interviews, he would say, I'm under secrecy, I'm under secrecy. But then I would say, okay, let me explain it to the people. And they'd say, I'm in agreement with you, I'm in agreement with you. But he was under that secrecy clause in agreement. Now, Ed, when he retired from Papoose Lake, Nevada, as a U.S. scientist, he decided to go public because all of his colleagues that retired on the same day, about seven of them, all ended up dead, and their bodies, one of them was found in the desert. They kill them because they don't want to have the knowledge going out the door working for them. So Ed gets fearful, and he takes an invitation from Bo Greitz to go up someplace in Nevada, do a speech. And he's up on stage talking about what he did for the government, and they shot him with an energy weapon, and they put him in a coma for 2 years. After he came out of the coma, that's when my friend Lisa and her husband met him at a restaurant. That's how I got to know Ed. Now, Ed confided me in those radio programs one hell of a lot of information because we talked about stuff, but he was under that secrecy clause. Secrecy clause that he didn't want to violate. Now, Ed bought war bonds back in the 1950s with his money. And they were in, who was in control then? It was Rockefellers. Rockefellers, the Rockefeller family. Fallen angel possessed human beings. By the way, Otis Johnson said the NSA has 200,000 of them registered with the NSA that are human being looking humans that are possessed by fallen angels. Fallen angels. He said 200,000 under the 1952 to 2012 agreement, which has been extended. Now, John Lear, who was a test pilot, knew Ed Slade. He remembered him. John was a friend of mine, became a friend. He lived down the street from a house I was living in that I was remodeling for a school teacher. Long story. So, John's friend was Bob Lazar. Now, I never talked to Bob directly, but John and Bob, along with Frank Knapp, K-N-A-P-P, Frank Knapp, I think is his name, with a local TV station in Las Vegas, had done several interviews with John Lear and Bob Lazar both over the years. Now, they had claimed that there's a pyramid on Mars. And they had pictures of it from satellite, something. But George Knapp, with the local TV station, testified before the United States Congress or Senate here 2 weeks ago about all the information he had acquired on the aliens and all the interviews. Up on, if you punch it in YouTube, I think it was, I don't know which, it's there's about three or four stations in Las Vegas, but they punch in George Knapp, and anybody doing the internet, I'll try to pull up his interview and put it underneath this program that we're doing. But he did about 6 hours of extensive coverage that they have released, so it's about 6 hours of just continue everybody. John Lear, the other one I just mentioned, etc. He's got it in there, but he testified before the Congress as all this information that he had gathered. Now, Papoose Lake, Nevada, the alien base. Let me tell you what happened to Ed. He bought these war bonds. So he decided, you know, I'm going to cash them in. So he went to tried to cash them in. They wouldn't let him cash them in. And he was being blocked, saying, oh, they're no good. Well, then I even got one of them. He sent me an actual war bond. I still got one in my files that are buried in southern Missouri. Here's the deal. Is that these are real bonds that he was buying, but they weren't any good. So he calls up Rockefellers, reaches out on the war bonds. Hey, I bought them from you. Oh yeah, we'll make good with you, Ed. We'll give you about $3 million against those bonds you got, but you got to quit talking to Stu Webb. You got to quit talking with Stu Webb. You've done radio shows. We can't have you doing that. So Ed says, Stu, we're gonna cut the conversation for a while and let me get things taken care of. And he says, I'll come pay you a visit. Because he was going to come give me some money, I guess, or something. He wanted to see me in person. I said, okay. Next thing I know, I get a call from Lisa and he's dead about a week later. Anyway, Ed told me, he says, Stu, you're never to tell anybody this. Now, let me back up for a minute about John Lear. His dad, I have him in an interview on my website where he admitted that his dad took a contract, sold Lear jets in 1952, and took a contract with the U.S. government to build 150 flying saucers for the government. He did it. 1952 to 1958 is actually when he ended his contract with them. That was John Lear's dad, had Lear jets. John was the test pilot at Area 51, also known as Groom Lake. Now, he was crippled. He died 3 or 4 years ago. He became crippled, but they targeted him heavily. And they targeted him so bad it caused him a divorce, and they'd been married for 40-some-odd years or whatever it was. But that's what happens when you come out and speak. They start targeting you and start hitting you and doing everything they can to destroy you. Now, here is one of the secrets that Ed Slade told me. Remember, Papoose Lake, Nevada. You brought this up about the tunnel up there near Monterey. I heard about that drowning of the body, and it ended up washing down, way down in the ocean. But anyway, they found a body, but that was someone drowned in Lake Tahoe. Now, the hole in there goes underneath a sub base, goes underneath Groom Lake. It goes underneath what's known as Groom Lake, Area 51. It goes underneath Papoose Lake, where the alien base is. It's a huge, huge cavern in there, a body of water. And this is where the aliens operate out of. But Ed told me, Stu, never to say anything. If you do, it'll get me killed. He says, after I'm dead, if you outlive me, he would say, he says, you can tell everybody. He said he took element 115, mu metal, 116, 117, and Napoleon 118, and he fused them together with some kind of radiation at the Papoose Lake place. And the aliens told him how to do it. He did it. He said, oh yeah, you made what we needed. He says, you take it down to this pyramid down there in Mexico City. Be there tomorrow. So Ed flies down. He goes up there with this loaf of bread-sized metal in a leather bag. And he says he walks up the pyramid on that day at that time that he met with Zohar or whatever his name was. He says, Stu, nobody was around the pyramid. He said, normally that place is packed with visitors. And he said, nobody was there. And he says, I'll walk up there. He says, you must be Ed Slade. And the guy was about 7'6" tall, looked Nordic, he said. He says, yeah, you must be Zorro or whatever your name is. Anyway, he says, yeah. So they shake hands. He says, now, did you bring me what you were supposed to? He says, yes. So he says, well, show it to me. So he pulls it out of a bag, and he hands it to the guy. And the guy hands it back. He says, now, take it out there, Ed, and set it down about 50 yards. He said, what? He said, go set it down. He said, turn around. I'll tell you if you're out far enough. So he did. And Ed counted it off, and he said, he turns around. The guy says, yeah, come on back here. I'll show you what you may be, Ed. Leave it there. So he sets it on the ground, and he goes back. He says, now turn around and look out there. And all of a sudden, it turned into a flying saucer, folks. It turned into a flying saucer. Ed says, oh, my God, how did you do that? He said, I thought it into a flying saucer. Now, he says, Ed. He turns it back to a loaf of bread. He says, now, Ed, you think it into a flying saucer. He says, I can't do that. He says, yeah, you can. Shut your eyes, face out that direction, shut your eyes. He did. He said, now start thinking it into a flying saucer. So Ed's trying to think it into a flying saucer. The alien says to him, Ed, you're thinking the wrong way. No, go over here to your left, where you were at, you bypassed it. Okay, now go through that. Okay, go here, go there. Oh, Ed, now stop. Open your eyes and look at what you made me. It was a saucer. Ed said he was reading my mind, Stu, and telling me what to think. That's how it turned into a flying saucer. He said, then the guy says, you want to take a little space trip? He says, where? He says, just take you up and show you planet Earth. He says, sure. So he took him up, brought him back down, set him down, and Ed told me that story, never to tell anybody until he's dead. But that's what I want to discuss about Ed Slade and Papoose Lake, for people to understand where one of our alien bases actually are. Now, Joe, did you pick it up from there?
Yeah, sure. So, there are other interludes with this that Stu is not saying, because there's so much to be said. But it all revolves around the alien. The alien is not an awful creature. There are angels that take a serpentine form. People have a hard time with that, but so be it. Now, I think, Stu, that the certificates were for the Rothschilds. I'm not sure. But in one of your other talks, you said the Rothschilds.
Rothschilds, yeah. What about them?
That is where Ed Slade had his gold certificates.
Yeah, whatever they were, war bonds, they called them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rockefellers.
So, in my book, there are two opposing forces. I'll simply call the bad force the Confederation. Then the good guys, the Galactic Federation, which are fighting the alien, the fallen angels. This is where we come into guys like William P. Tompkins. William Tompkins, into YouTube, and you can listen to his talks. He was extensive. And what he did was to work for Admiral Obata. And Admiral Obata was heading a undercover operation to infiltrate naval people that could speak German fluently and knew Germany very well. They infiltrated a Paramunda where they brought back data. In other words, William P. Tompkins would take those and create what they were saying and would show them Admiral Obata. Well, all those packets were taken to places like Douglas at Santa Monica, where John Lear's father was helping build the flying saucers. So there's this connection between Ed Slade and William P. Tompkins verifying that, yes, indeed, we have been in contact with the aliens. However, there's a group that does not want it revealed, and there is another group that does. In my book, it's what you have as the fallen angel alien, the Confederation, is delaying disclosure. The good guys want it out there because then they can reveal who is behind this big push. Which takes me to another thing, if you really want to get into it and see what they're talking about on aliens and greys and insectoids and what are called the reptilians, of what they had to do with Africa. And you can put up Credeau Mutwa, the interview that David Icke made of Credeau Mutwa, and he tells a story of what happened in South Africa. So anyway, that is the story of Ed Slade and William P. Tompkins. And Area 51, Area 52, Room Lake, Papoose Lake. And as John Lear said, one of the reasons that Kennedy was assassinated is that he was going to disclose the UFO connection. And unfortunately, we know what happened.
Yeah, Daddy Bush killed him.
Go ahead. Sue.
Go ahead. On Kennedy, that's a whole separate subject. That's where we get Jim Fetzer in as well. But the proof and evidence is there that Daddy Bush ran the operation to kill kill President John F. Kennedy, along with that other stooge that later became the Warren Commission, or the, what was the name, Admiral somebody. They were OSS, all over Cuba, the Bay of Pigs. What was the name of the boat? The Barbara. What was the name of the boat? The Zapata. What's the name of Daddy Bush's, before his death, his company? Zapata Oil. Pensable, J. Hugh Lucky. Connected. That's a whole separate subject. But I want to talk also about the Western White House, where Dick Cheney hid out during his vice presidency the whole time. It's called the Argo Tunnel. It's behind Denver, Colorado. If you go up I-70, Idaho Springs, Colorado, the first city up the mountain, as you're climbing, you take the first exit. It's a highway going south. You take that exit and you go south and you go about 3 miles, and on the left-hand side you see one huge gravel road. That goes into the Argo. That's how they supply it with stuff. But it's a Western White House, and back in the 80s, they started moving people out of 80s, 90s mainly. They started moving out of Washington, D.C., and started taking employees to the Western White House, which is the Argo Tunnel, which goes to the center of the Earth, folks. There's a big sun in the center of the Earth, and the Argo Tunnel goes all the way down there. They fly their 35,000-mile-an-hour special jet that shapeshifts, missile jet, that goes into outer space. It flies in there, and it flies in, they call it the Blue Light Special, over a little town called Center, Colorado, down in the low-level growing area, part of the upper desert, while the food's grown in there. I sat down there and watched the Blue Light Special, being invited by farmers to come down, and who were patriots, to come down and have a barbecue and spend the night, along with a cop in Denver, a sheriff of another county. There was a friend of mine who was a patriot, okay? And they had me down there, and I watched it. I mean, and, oh, what's his name? I've had him on, he's an ex-New York cop and whistleblower and the whole bit, but I've had him on that year, and I'm trying to think of his name, but I'm,
I don't know. Rothstein?
Rothstein, yes. And Jim was aware of this particular craft, and I heard they flew 40,000 miles an hour. He said 35,000 miles an hour. He's probably accurate. But Jim's a great guy. He helped a lot of people, including the Franklin cover-up, the photographer, got him out of jail. He's helped a lot of people, a lot of people. Jim's a great guy. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he wanted to lay low. People had come to the point you have to keep alive. Rothstein described that as the Aurora. It's called the Aurora airplane. And it flies at 35,000 miles an hour, and it shapeshifts, the wings move backwards and stuff, and it gets into a bullet form. It's mu metal, element 115, fused with something else. Top secret crap, but it flies in there. Now, Dick Cheney stayed in the Denver Tech Center in a hotel there. I forgot which one it was. I think it was called the Adams Martin Hotel. And up on the top floor is the president's suite, and down below is a special floor that elevator goes to, which then goes to the Argo Tunnel. It comes up to a big door, and you have to put your facial recognition, your thumbprint, and all the other stuff on it, and your card, and you'd be able to supposedly get in there. And that goes into the Argo. Now, that's the Western White House. Now, 6th Avenue and Kipling, I was out there and Kipling runs north and south, and 6th Avenue runs east and west. And I went out there, and there's the little Federal Center right there on the southeast corner. And so I took a left. I decided I'm going to go check it out. Someone said, go out there about 3:30, whatever time it was. Shift change. I got stuck in traffic for 45 minutes watching 1,000 cars, I think I counted, come up out of the hole, coming out of the garage of the Federal Center, where they're parked underground. I said, Jesus Christ, my friend was right. He was right. I was stuck there for a good half an hour in traffic. They wouldn't let me move. They had U.S. Marshals or whatever they are out there directing traffic, getting them out of the hole and putting the next shift in. I thought, oh my God. But that's the Argo Tunnel. Now, the United States came up with a boring machine. And this boring machine cuts through the earth, I don't know how many miles it is, several miles in a day, it will cut. And they back trucks up to it, and it takes and dumps the gravel and all the rock that they cut through in. And it turns the inside of the tunnel to glass. Then they come back in and they pour a two-way highway on it. Two-way road. They've got these all across the United States. Here in Kansas City area, underneath or near Crown Center, the memorial down there, World War II Memorial, whatever it is. I forgot the name of the place. Been so long. Underneath there is where government employees, in case of emergency, they disappear into the tunnel, into one of the tunnels. Now, there's tunnels all around America that they bore with this boring machine. Otis Johnson told me that the White House has the Situation Room. I'm not going to say how many stories for national security reasons. I understand it is below ground. It's quite a ways down. But that's a Situation Room. In the event if there's an emergency, they got to have a situation going on. They go down there and they have all the communications, everything they need. But Otis told me that he was dispatched once out of the Situation Room immediately and to go out on this little deal. He said it's like a bullet. He says it's got oxygen mask. It seats two people. He said him and his partner at the time, CIA, got inside, and they put their oxygen mask on. He says, Stu, it's like a big bubble. He says, it's got a big glass window, a bulletproof window wrapping around the front of it. That's a little pod. He says, it runs on a track. So he said they started it up, and he was going to Los Angeles, from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles. He says, the thing started going. And he said it was like a rocket, like I was going into outer space. He says, I'm flying through that tunnel. And he says, I looked out. He says, I could see us raising up off the track. And all you could see was a big boat of electricity between where our wheels were or whatever it was and the rail. And he said, if we came off that thing, he says, I would have been like a fly swatted on the wall. He says, if we came off the track. He said, it took all the energy out of both of us. By the time we got to Los Angeles International Airport, he said, we were exhausted. But we were supposed to not be seen flying covert operation of state and the whole bit. He said, it took them 45 minutes to go from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles International Airport, folks. 45 minutes. This is the technology that we have. And the secrets that we have underground. And the stuff pertaining to these missing scientists we brought up in the last deal. It ties into where my dad, one of them is missing, that worked at Los Alamos Scientific Laboratory. And my dad was a vice president in Bendix, Kansas City, which is now Honeywell, make toys for the government. My dad taught at Los Alamos Scientific Laboratory. Inspectors there at Bendix on how to do their job so they could reduce it down from 300 to 150 like he had done with Bendix. He was a vice president. He was in charge of quality reassurance when he retired at $92,000 a year. That was in 91. Now, when he died 3 or 4 years ago, they took his salary down to $36,000 a year when he was in a nursing home. It was that bad because of the buyouts with AG and others, okay, and Honeywell and Daddy Bush, so Bush could control the company. But one of the scientists worked there at Bendix. He also worked out of Los Alamos both. He disappeared. It's up, I'll have the link underneath this show, and yep, 2 days ago, 3 days ago show as well. But my father, I asked him when I was a kid, what do you do for a living, Dad? And he looks at me kind of funny. Now I'm about 15 years of age, and I'm reading these declassified Bendix newsletters. Just a mailman could just pull a staple out of the folded over thing, declassified this, declassified that. It's a lot of satellites and stuff like that, but here was the deal. What do you do for a living, Dad? He looks at me and said, what do you mean? I said, you've never told me what you did for a living. He says, he smiles, he says, I make cups, saucers, and spoons. He never told me, folks. Otis Johnson sat across from his couch when he was in town. He called me up, and my parents had invited me to dinner that night, so I was on my way over there, 5 minutes from having dinner with him. And he calls me up and says, hey, Stu, I'm pulling into Kansas City. Where are you at? And I said, well, I'm supposed to have dinner with my parents. I said, he said, well, what's the address? So he you know, looks it up, and he said, I'll be there in about 10, 15 minutes. I said, okay. So he comes, knocks, you know, I see him get out of his car, and you know, dead end street. And so anyway, I greeted him, and he comes in. I introduce him, my dad and my mother, and they sat down on one couch in the living room, and he sat on the opposite couch, you know, facing each other. And he says, yeah, Mr. Webb, he says, I had an interesting career. He says, I understand you had one too. I understand that you, you know, were in charge of quality reassurance out there at Bendix. He says, yeah. He says, yeah. He says, I did a lot of business with Bendix over the years. He says, involved in this and this and this and that and this and that. And my dad started turning white. He didn't know what to say. He didn't say nothing. My mother looked at him a couple of times. She looked at Otis, and she's looking at me, and by that time, I'd gotten some coffee. He says, oh, Stu, he says, she says, are you going to have dinner with us, Otis? He says, no. He says, I want to take Stu out for dinner, if that's okay. He says, because I know he needs a donation, and I'm going to show him how to get a donation. She says, what? He says, yeah, we're going to go down to this gambling casino where I'm going to spend the night at this place. And he says, I'm going to buy him dinner. And he says, I'm going to get him $1,000 he probably needs in his pocket. She kind of looked at me funny and looks at him. And so anyway, we go down there, and he gives me $100 bill. He takes me to the roulette table, and he gives me $100 bill, and he says, nah, he says, you get some chips with that $100, and he says, you do what I tell you to do. I said, okay. He said, if I tell you to put it on number 5 or number 12 or whatever it is, he says, you do that, and you put that amount. And he says, just do what I tell you to do. I said, okay. I did it. An hour later, I had $1,000 in my pocket. He put $10,000 in his pocket. And I said, Otis, how the hell did you do that? He says, the CIA taught us how, if we get in a jam, on how to go to a casino and pick up cash. I said, no shit. Anyway, so following weekend, my mother called me and said, oh, the whole family's coming over for dinner on Sunday, Stu. Can you be here? I said, yeah, I'll be there. So I went over, and these are my brothers and sister and their kids and the whole bit over at Grandma and Grandpa's house having dinner. And my dad says, I want to talk to you. He takes me out in the backyard. He says, listen, he says, your friend Otis, he says, Stu, I've thought about this. He says, and I should have said something that night to you when you left, but he says, I'm going to tell you. He says, if you ever tell anybody what Otis told you, he says, in front of me, he said, they'll come kill you and they'll arrest me for treason and sedition. He said, so keep your mouth shut about the toys that we made. I said, I will, Dad. So I don't talk about them. Anyway, that's a story of Otis. But you want to add to this, Joe?
Don't think so. I think we need to bring it to a close.
Okay. Now, we are in a deep problem because people should look up Colonel McGregor. He's telling the truth, and there's two other colonels, and I'll be posting them on my site today. They're telling the truth about what is really happening over there, such as the USS Nimitz was sunk, the Gerald Ford was sunk, Israel was annihilated last night. I mean, Russia stepped in, gave missiles, China gave missiles, Russia stepped in to the peace plan yesterday, I believe it was, or day before, and they brokered a deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which are both enemies. They broke a deal, and this is Revelation, Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39, Gog and Magog coming to pass. If you look at it, it's in the Old Testament. And they joined forces. Now, Israel's been smashed. Where does that leave us in the U.S.? Do they have the missile capability to shoot us? I'm going to tell you something that Russian Putin told Otis Johnson on the phone. During the Syrian crisis, the U.S. was blamed for doing a chemical attack upon the civilians there in Syria. This is years ago. Otis was on the NSA shift. That's working out of his home through his computer, and that's what he was doing with General Flynn when he was working with him. Now, he's working out of his home on the computer, all secure, and his shift, and I forgot how many on it per shift. I don't want to get into it, but I'd heard a couple times. But they were doing their thing. Otis goes to bed about 9 or 10 o'clock, he said. He gets a phone call about 10 o'clock at night. And it's the NSA. Get on your computer now. We got President Putin on here. So he gets on there, and Otis speaks a fluent Russian, or did. And he was trained by the CIA and had 3 PhDs. Okay? He did an operation where he took pictures as a farmer and went to Russia. He told me about it. And I saw a picture hanging on his mother's wall of him making a trip. That was a deal where he went in and took pictures of a secret underground base in Russia. But he knew Russian, spoke a fluent Russian. So they got him on the NSA. He's got him on at 10 o'clock or 10:30 at night on the phone and puts him in with Russian Putin. And he hears the translator and he hears him discussing and talking. And so he introduced himself. He says, President Putin, it's Otis Johnson. Well, he knew who Otis was. And he even said, how are you, Otis? He says, I'm fine, sir. He says, what's the problem? He says, the U.S. has attacked Syria. He says, with these chemical weapons. And he says, sir, Mr. President, he says, I'm aware of the rumors, but he says, it's not true. The U.S. was not involved. It was Israel who attacked them. Israel. It wasn't the U.S. He says, so you're telling me Israel did it, Otis? He says, Israel did it. We did not do it. So don't blame us. He says, I'm going to give you a warning, Otis. I'm going to take your word for this. I'm going to investigate this further. But he tells him, he says, in the event, if we have an attack and we tie it to the United States, he says, I'm going to drop a nuke in the Azar Fault. Now, folks, the Azar Fault, he said, I'm going to drop a nuke by submarine in the Azar Fault. And he says, we're going to explode it. And he said, the United States will suffer a tidal wave 1,800 feet tall on the East Coast, all the way from Maine, all the way to the tip of Florida. And he says it would go inland halfway across the United States. That'd be about to the Mississippi River, splitting the United States. He says, I will do that if necessary, if you attack and we find out it was you. He says, yes, sir. Now, the Azar Fault is about 2,000 miles out, folks, off the New York coast. And if they drop, see, it'd be so simple to wipe out half the United States. That'd take out half the whole East Coast. So we're in a very bad situation. Because Iran has never lost a war. And they're going to continue. Because Israel. Now, this is Ezekiel 38 and 39. There's all kinds of stuff in Revelations. There's all kinds of things that are happening. We are in the great tribulation, in my opinion. And it's about 1260 days, about 3 years or 3.5 years. And I believe that we have begun it. This is World War III, folks. And this is where they got to get rid of and build the third temple, or the Antichrist is going to come out, of course, and declare himself to be God in a temple in Israel, whether it's the current Temple Mount or whether it's a new temple to be built, which the 007 Club and all the others, Pat Robertson, all those fake preachers that benefited from Daddy Bush and his mining and all kinds of other stuff they did illegal, the 700 Club, raised tons of money in the millions to rebuild this temple back in the 1980s. They raised it in fundraising and the whole bit. But Joe, do you want to add to any of that?
Okay, I will, but don't interrupt because it's kind of hard to get this out. What Stu was talking about is called the Poseidon torpedo. Yes, they can put it right off the Azores where there's a fault line, and that could then, when it explodes, it will send a tidal wave that will be 1,800 feet in height. But they have ringed the entire United States with that Poseidon torpedo. Now, this is where the Edgar Cayce readings come in, and this is where other prognostications from prophets are coming to fruition. Maybe, I hope not. But if that tidal wave comes in and there is a nuclear exchange, it could set off the Madras Fault and the San Andreas Fault line, which could then cause the salt dome that surrounds BP and New Orleans, cracking that salt dome and then escaping methane gas up the Mississippi Valley all the way to an area where there's a hot volcano and then explode. So then they would have, then you would definitely have the Edgar Cayce readings and the Earth changes that would occur. So we'll see what happens on this. Pray that it doesn't, because if that does, they're going to set off, for instance, that could possibly set off the Red Cauldron up in Montana, where it explodes and the ash drifts over all of the western part of the United States, having a winter time during summer. So we're waiting to see what happens if things go cool off. There's a lot to be, so pray for the United States and pray for that this won't happen, because everybody will lose on this, and it's not something that I would want to have to go through.
No.
So that's all we got, Stu.
No, and folks, all I can tell you is be prepared for war, okay? And stock up on a lot of canned goods, fruits, vegetables, things of that nature, dried chicken, tuna, fish, whatever you like, because the day comes, we may not have any electricity. If they do an EMP on the United States and blow a couple off, it's going to burn down the cars, that is, your computer in your car will not work. What replaced your points is a low device in there in your distributor. It burns it out, and then where are you going to get the computer and the device when there's millions and millions and millions of cars shut down across the United States? This is very serious. The old cars that work, the ones that, you know, got the points in them and the distributor and got the coil, they'll still run. EMP doesn't affect them. But so just be prepared. Be prepared. We're getting ready to go something very severe, and gas prices are already hitting $4 a gallon over here in Kansas City. They're saying probably $6 within a month. But we're going to have food shortages. The farmers, I've got some clips. Farmers are screaming about the fact that they don't have fertilizer. They don't have it. It comes out of the Middle East, and they're coming up short over here in Kansas, in Missouri area. Anyway, with that said, Joe, you got anything to add other than prayer?
That's it.
Okay, I want to thank you, Joe, for being on with me, and we're going to do this again tomorrow, hopefully with Jim Fetzer, and we'll see
right.
What his military background experience is. And with that said, I think we gave a pretty full disclosure of two different programs about the aliens. Thank you, Joe.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good day. This is Stu Webb, StuWebb.com.